and welcome to the latest episode of Minorities in Publishing podcast. Thank you to all the new listeners, and thank you to the listeners who've been around for the past year. This is the first episode after the one-year anniversary. If you follow the podcast on Tumblr, it's minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com. If you follow on Twitter, it is Minorities in Pub. And I've been retweeting a lot of stuff on upcoming episodes, and I'm very excited, as I am always excited, to have a guest, and wonderful guests at that. The latest is Claudia Martinez, who is a design director at one of the Big Five publishers, and she has extensive experience in this industry. And it's funny because when we met, we kind of geeked out on fonts because we're both typesetters. so it's like, I love this font. Isn't Helvetica over?
Yeah. That was so last year.
So this might be the nerdy design episode, which is going to be my favorite.
Jen, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Claudia, for being on. So one thing before getting into the questions is, let's kind of clarify what design director is, because there's so many different titles. You go to any publishing house, like we were talking about, managing editorial,
right.
You know.
Right.
Regular quote-unquote editorial,
right?
Production editor, which is what I am, design director, which is what you are,
right?
Yeah. And sometimes a lot of those positions overlap,
right?
So I'm really happy to have someone who's like in my area, so those who may not want to be acquiring books or do marketing can learn more about the more technical area, what requires kind of a critical eye but also a creative mindset as well,
right? Well, it's very true. Design director is so vague. You know, within publishing, you have design director with covers, design director with interiors, mm-hmm. design director with marketing, design director with all these other departments. What I do as a design director is my focus is on the interiors. Mm-hmm. So I manage an imprint with about 200 titles a year. Mm-hmm. In my role, we are responsible, in a nutshell, for taking the manuscript, i.e. Microsoft Word document, and turning it into a book.
Yeah.
And that involves, as you know, choosing fonts and calculating page counts.
Oh, yeah.
And making sure it's readable and applicable to the kind of book it is.
Yeah, the feel. You want to get the feel of the book.
Yes, feel is, it's, you want to just open the book and like hear birds. No. my goal always when I'm designing a book, there's two goals really, is that it's inviting and warm and whatever the topic is, because that's how you're going to get someone to buy the book.
Yes.
But also that it's, someone can look at it and say, not notice the design either. You know, I don't want the design to take it away.
Yes, it shouldn't be too flashy.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like in my role, what we're doing is we're making these manuscripts into actual books and sort of taking it to the very end process before it becomes a book, before it gets printed.
And you do nonfiction, fiction titles?
Nonfiction, fiction. I'm trying to think
primarily.
Of our list. Primarily nonfiction and fiction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For one of the Big Five people.
Yes.
So for anyone who's listened to this podcast, you know what my first question is going to be, is how Claudia got into publishing. Really, what was the entry point? Because it is very specific, design director, and, you know, like you said, a little vague in that it's not working on covers, so it's not as though you went to School of Visual Arts, you know, to learn typesetting. I don't know. I mean, I know there are typography classes and all these things, but sometimes you don't necessarily learn typesetting before you get in the job. Sometimes it's a very on-the-job type of thing.
Right.
So did you start out in this area, or were you somewhere else and then landed in design?
I got into, firstly, I really started in publishing through interning.
Were they paid, may I ask?
Of course you can ask. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, they were.
Whoa.
They were paid.
Nice.
I remember that. So I grew up in New York City. I went to school in New York City. I went to college in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Brewer College.
Yay, fellow CUNY.
Yay! So one of the advantages of that is I could always intern during the year. And I was very, I was very motivated to seek out internships of all kinds, and in publicity and in accounting and everything. I just wanted to try everything.
Okay.
And I loved books, always loved books. I loved reading. I loved to write. I love just my apartment is a library, essentially. So I started looking into internships in pub houses, and there was an event at Baruch that Baruch was actually advertising where at Simon & Schuster was holding a diversity in publishing seminar.
Oh, yeah.
For college students, yeah. And they were very adamant about, this is not an interview, this is just you networking, you know, come, don't bring your resume. Like, they don't want that kind of, they just want to basically encourage you to come into the industry. And there was a diversity movement. Like, I remember feeling that that year. So I went to that, and in the middle of, there was like a break, I decided to essentially schmooze with everybody. And I'm not naturally a schmoozer, if that's the right word. But I knew that that was my opportunity. So I remember one of the presenters was presenting an actual pages of type laid out. And I was so captivated by it, especially because they were what we call blues.
Yeah.
But actual blues, which is when the book is, like, it's been basically ready to go, and it's printed on, it's not blues anymore. Like, now it's just...
Yeah, it's just proof.
PDF pages.
Yeah. Page proofs, yeah.
But you can see, back in the day, because, you know, that was so long ago, the ink was actually blue, and the paper was, like, warm from coming off the press. And, I still distinctly remember the smell. I know that sounds interestingly weird, but... That's
people like dig the smell of books.
Yes,
new book,
yes.
You know?
My senses are very much involved in my love for books. So anyway, she was doing this presentation on that, and I went up to her and I just started talking to her and telling her I was aware of blues, like I had sort of researched the publishing process and all that. And she just randomly said to me, "We're looking for an intern," which we don't get a lot of applicants because everybody goes to editorial.
Yeah, or marketing.
Or
yeah,
marketing.
Absolutely.
Would you be interested? And I said, yes. And she was like, well, you have to, you know, interview with the right people, but, you know, let's talk after this. And from there, I interviewed, and I started my career at Simon almost 12 years ago.
About the time I started, 13.
Yeah. And it was, and so in during the internship, I was studying communications, but... So during the internship is really when I learned Cork and InDesign and font and you know what picas are and like size and lead and you know laying out a page. You know, that was one of the great things about the internship program there. They really have you work on books. And I just fell in love with it. So that I learned everything about the job on the job.
And so you basically transitioned from the internship into another position?
Right. So I was an intern for about a year. I wouldn't leave. And they were great. They were wonderful to me. They encouraged me to stay. And I was offered a full-time role after a year and a half in the desktop publishing department, which is basically another word or another fancier way of saying typesetter.
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the day.
You don't
know
that anymore.
No, no. Yeah. And so in that department, I started making corrections to existing files, working on very simple designs, and just sort of being a part of the team rather than being the project manager slash head designer.
Yeah.
So I stayed there for about 3 years, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And then from there I moved on to the next level, which was I really wanted to get into design.
Okay.
And I knew that because I had hands-on experience. Now I knew what the job entailed. And I also felt like this was like a secret. Like, again, everybody, when they think publishing, they think editorial, marketing. Like, but this was like, this is fun.
Yeah.
I love coming to work.
Yeah.
This is, and I'm getting paid for it. It was very fulfilling.
Yeah.
So I actively looked for positions in design in other companies. And I got a design position in the company I'm in now. And that was almost 7 years ago, and I've been there ever since. But within that department, I went from designer to design manager to director. And that was really, again, fulfilling. Like, it was like there was that advancement there.
And it's nice to have a person of color have a director title.
Yes.
That's refreshing.
Yes. I'm very proud of that. Yeah. I think... unfortunately, there aren't many people of color that have those kinds of roles, certainly in the company I work in. I mean, there are a few and far between, but it's not as much as I'd like to see, per se. Something I've noticed also is when I've been hiring for my team, I don't get a lot of applicants. Minority applicants.
Yeah, kind of not surprised, because like you said, it was kind of a underground secret.
Right.
Especially this particular department, because I landed in production. Like, I started in editorial, because that's what, you know, the programs kind of advertise, and that's what you kind of prepare yourself, doing P&Ls and all that stuff.
Right.
And then found that this was just a better fit.
Right.
So...
Right. So, and that's the thing, it was an accidental arrival, but it became your career.
Yeah.
And for me, too, like, it was completely by chance that I decided to talk to this person, and this person said there's an internship, and it was completely a fluke.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like my career has been based on flukes. And that's something I think about when outreach to people to come into publishing is how do I present more flukes out there? Like, how can I present more opportunities out there to bring in more applicants, more diversity, or expose, like, you know, more exposure on what it is that we do in design, interior design specifically.
Yeah. Well, also in regards to going to this diversity event, do you think if it hadn't been labeled a diversity event that you would have gone anyways because you were curious about publishing or no?
That's a really good question. I do remember seeing the title Diversity in Publishing. And that was very attractive to me. Baruch is very diverse.
Oh, yeah.
Which I love. And I went, you know, going to school in New York, there it was... From grade school on, it was always a diverse mix. So I was very aware of how important that was to me. So it definitely drew me in. But I also did have an interest in publishing. If it was something like how to become an editor, I may not have gone, because I did know I didn't want to become an editor. And that I knew from just doing my own sort of research. And it was so, that would be bland to me. I would say diversity in publishing is like spicy, if that makes any sense. Or like, that definitely was very attractive to me.
It's very clear cut what they're aiming to do.
Like, it right away it sets this tone that, you know, we're open to ideas. We're open to, we want to extend the culture. And we want to be able to... you know, offer these opportunities to everybody. So that was a very positive precedent that was set just from the title.
Like David Unger, who you met at the last meeting we were at, he was the reason I got into publishing, because he has the CUNY City College Certificate Program in Publishing, the CPC, which is, I think, the first program that actively got people of color in the industry. You know, like, now you have Columbia has one, NYU has one. Like, pretty much everyone has a publishing course, and some have masters, which I went, Masters of Publishing, I don't agree with, but,
right.
you know, it's interesting that now it's kind of branching out, and I feel like that's where it kind of started, but it's interesting when you say, we're specifically here to diversify, and then you wonder how much the people, the hiring managers in particular, are taking from that. Like, are they realistically taking that group of resumes and business cards and remembering faces and
right.
all that stuff?
I think being in a position to hire, one thing that I was surprised about was HR's role. Mm-hmm. Like, HR will weed out
okay.
a ton of applicants just by a computer program or keyword search. Like, and when I found that out, I was like, mortified. I was like, so some people are being rejected simply because of a computer program.
Yeah.
And I understand why. I mean, they're getting hundreds of resumes, mm-hmm. so it completely makes sense to me. But at the same time, I thought about how many applicants would be great in this role that were being, you know,
weeded out automatically.
And, you know, I understand it.
To a point.
Yeah. And going back to what I said before, the pool of applicants that were presented to me,
mm-hmm.
the diversity in that was pretty low.
Yeah.
And I was actually pretty vocal with HR and said, I'm not saying I want to specifically hire, what was the right word I used? I don't remember the word. I used something politically correct, I'm pretty sure.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But I
because you have to be in
yeah.
certain instances.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whenever though there's like an office like that, you just have to be very careful. But
yeah.
I just was my concern was exposure. Like
yeah.
I'm not going
yeah.
to hire anybody unless they're the best candidate. But I also want to have the best candidates in front of me from all walks.
Yeah. yeah.
And basically,
and they may not have used those keywords.
Right.
They might have used, you know, three words where they could have used one to
right.
explain something. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm aware of that when I'm interviewing and I'm looking, I'm aware of how important it is
mm-hmm.
for me
mm-hmm.
to have that exposure to the minorities
mm-hmm.
who are interested in publishing, but also letting minorities know that these opportunities
exactly.
exist.
Yeah.
I am one of three Latinas in my imprint, in my division.
Throughout the whole imprint. Wow.
Yes. And there are people that will confuse us, which is a whole other issue that...
Goodness gracious.
I'm very upfront, so I will be very, you know, I'll make a joke about it or something, but when I see things like that, it's
yeah.
like, this is a real issue, this is a real problem.
Yeah.
So the fact that we are three at the very least is a lot more than when I started.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Yes.
So you were the only one for a while.
Yes. Yes.
Mm.
And then before me, I believe there was one person before me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It hasn't gone over three.
Wow.
Yeah.
Disheartening.
A little bit.
Not surprising, but disheartening.
Yeah.
Especially for one of the bigger publishers which has a lot of numbers.
Right.
So, I'm kind of obsessed with this topic now. Like, as a hiring manager, because I spoke with Amanda Nelson a couple episodes again, and she talked about how she was, for her, she was looking at writing samples specifically and how biased she realized her biases. And she was reading them blind. And then she would go and find out who this person was, and she was like, they're all white. They're all 20-year-old white girls. Yeah. Like, why do I like that voice so much? So as a hiring manager, when HR is giving you, you're not even seeing the larger pool. They're just whittling it down for you, and then you see what they're... So do you ever go back and say, get me more? Get me
oh,
more.
Yes. Oh, so, yes.
Or I don't like any of these?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
My first time hiring for my team, first of all, I have to say my HR rep was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
She was very patient with me, but I kept going back and saying, I need more. Like, these are not up to par.
Mm-hmm.
And finally she said to me, listen, you're never going to know 100%. I can keep finding applicants for you, but I think you really have to narrow it down. And I felt like I was sort of pressured to make a decision. Mm. And I remember that person I hired was a last-minute applicant. White girl. Mm-hmm. She is. But she was talented and great. And it is it's a package. Like, I'm not going to hire you because of your culture, or I'm not only going to hire you because even of your talent. Like, you have to be congenial and understanding and work mm-hmm. well with personalities. And,
yeah.
You know, if I can find all that in one applicant, then, you know, they're a very high candidate.
Yeah.
Just that first time around, though, I was very pushy. I would push back.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And then subsequently, after, is the same thing. I would, if I wasn't happy, I would.
Yeah.
I would definitely push back. But I am fully aware that the applicants that are presented in front of me are not as diverse as I'd like them to be. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, beyond the keyword aspect, that there might be some kind of automatic, potentially unintentional, you know, biases? And just like, oh, well, you know, high levels, you know. I mean, for, you know, coming from CUNY schools, you know, there's nothing wrong. CUNY is an amazing place. I recommend it mm-hmm. all the time. Brilliant, brilliant. People continue to come out of CUNY. But, you know, people are going to Columbia. People are going to NYU for publishing programs. And those names carry weight. And I wonder if, yeah, seeing that, does it really help the candidate versus the Columbia certificate publishing program, whatever they call it, versus the City College,
right?
Certificate program.
You know, I'm probably not going to say the most popular answer to that, but I am turned off by the publishing programs.
Really?
It's not that I won't interview or possibly offer you a job.
No, of course, but it doesn't necessarily highlight.
No.
Yeah.
I think one of my questions, actually, when I interview is, did you work during college and where?
Mm.
And I have this theory that if you've done retail or waited tables or cleaned, you have skills that are going to prepare you for all kinds of experiences.
I do agree with you on that.
Yeah.
And you've worked with people outside of an office,
right?
Oh boy,
yeah, right. Yeah. You learn to humble yourself. You learn to deal with all kinds of
hopefully
crazy personalities.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah.
I know some who have.
Some are just not. We'll never get there. Yeah. Lost causes, but I've gone to HR and I've said I specifically have said to them, I like applicants from CUNY. Mm-hmm. I would like applicants from CUNY. I think those schools aren't looked at enough, to be
mm-hmm,
honest.
Mm-hmm.
I got my foot in the door because I was obnoxious. Like, even that word has this negative connotation, but I was in people's faces. Like, I want an opportunity. I want to do this. Let me, you know. I got my director title from that. You know, like, I was active in actively seeking it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my foot in the door, it's just... The opportunities for mm-hmm. CUNY students, I think, isn't as big as if you go to Columbia or NYU or, you know, in my case, like even Pratt or SVA.
Yeah,
SVA. SVU. So, no, SVA, sorry. I'm blanking. Long day. you know, I didn't go to art school.
Yeah.
So I also recognize that who I am is not... I'm not going to find someone just like me either.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if I'm looking for someone just like me, then I'm making just the same mistake that everybody else is. I'm narrowing it down to one particular school.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the opportunity to have that diversity, mm-hmm. the pool to be grander. So mm-hmm. I have gone back and said, I don't care for the publishing programs. That's not going to be a make or break.
Mm-hmm.
A make or break for me will be, you know, how does this person feel about working and going to school at the same time? Or how did this person mm-hmm. feel about dealing with a hard personality?
Mm-hmm.
Or
how do they love books?
And
like,
do they genuinely
love books?
Right.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised how many applicants, they try to, like, dance around it, you know? Like, oh, I like books. I'll read, you know. No, I don't. Tell me.
That's horrible.
Yeah, and
so 101, don't do that.
No, no, no. At least come in with 3 books and be prepared to explain them. Just the rule of thumb there. Yeah.
Wow. So it's just so interesting to hear the hiring manager perspectives. Like, I've met with people after they've been hired. I haven't, I've hired freelancers, but I haven't hired, people to work with me on a daily basis in that aspect. So it's interesting to hear what you're going after HR for and saying, I want this, I want that. And the mindset that you're looking at it from is, based on my experience, I'm looking for similar experiences, but open to other ones as well, while also noting the working aspect. Because I think that's very key, that I've met people that, especially when I started, it was very obvious, like those internships that we did in the summer, that was their first ever job experience.
Right.
And even so, even with the internship, their mom and dad was paying for their apartment. Because they weren't from New York necessarily. They were coming from who knows where, Midwest, West Coast, wherever. They liked books.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought it would be exciting.
Right.
Mom and dad are paying for your apartment for your summer.
Right.
And you're getting paid from the internship. That's just play money.
Right.
You're not paying any bills.
Right. Oh my goodness, so, that's so familiar.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that was one of my big internships. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember that and remember thinking, huh? Like, no, my mom didn't even pay for my college. Like, I had to do that.
Yeah.
And I specifically remember people living in the city who used the internship money as play. You know?
Oh, yeah. Going out, hanging out.
Yeah.
Buying stuff on, Prince Street.
Right. And I blame, I actually jokingly blame, obviously pop culture, but, Dawson's Creek. I don't know if that show.
I remember Dawson's Creek, yeah.
That one character, Joey, became an editor at, 24 or some insane
Such
thing.
BS.
In New York. Exactly.
I mean, now maybe for an e-zine, that's not so, unimaginable.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, if it was, you create an Exo Jane or something.
Sure. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the way they made it seem so easy and that this could happen.
Oh,
and Felicity was another show. I'm going back to my WB shows, but they show this life of New York that's not real.
No, no.
You know?
And you notice who's at the head of it, though. It's not a Latina who's becoming... I mean, look how long it took Ugly Betty to get where she was on that show.
Right.
Like, Ugly Betty actually had to work her way up.
Right. She had an existing following in Latin American television.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was really... when that blew up, that was... I was so surprised. I still was very surprised that people are watching this.
Oh, yeah. It was a great show.
Yeah.
In the beginning.
Yeah. And it was so refreshing. I was early on in my career when that show came out, and I've been thinking, I don't know where I'm going to go. There's no one I can, I don't have a mentor I can talk to, or,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes I feel like just my last name, Martinez, people make decisions already based on that.
Mm.
I have no one to talk to about this.
Mm-hmm.
But with Ugly Betty, I remember, obviously it's a fictional show, but the themes behind it and the premises and her daily struggles like that. I remember being very motivated by that.
Yeah, yeah. And her kind demeanor is she wasn't a caricature.
Right.
It was one of the first times for me, period, seeing a Latino in a main role, because I'd never really seen him, not even in secondary roles in the 80s, 90s, really. Even in shows I really like Buffy.
Right.
Really the go-to minority is black.
Right.
On shows.
That's true.
You don't really see, and then Latino, and then Asian.
Right.
And usually it's East Asian, not even South Asian in that aspect. So, I could see how, just still not seeing yourself in books, on television, and then you're starting a job that is very, very white.
Yes.
In community of feeling,
Right. And I definitely felt left out during that first internship, which is ironic because the whole way I got the internship was through a diversity seminar. But I think I can't really remember exactly, but there were a lot more white interns. Mm. And I think it was me and maybe a couple Asian, but it was definitely mostly white people. And I felt left out. I felt like I don't know where I fit here.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I think I was very lucky in my first internship with Bookspan. One of the editors was a black woman, and she was really cool, and she was, you know, just, we got along, and it was a small department. And then I was at Scholastic. That was, you know, where a lot of the people had their parents buying, you know, renting their apartments. And but there were a lot of Asians, like Korean, Chinese Americans, and a couple Latinos as well. And I was the only black person. That's what I was the only black person in our segment. We were not at the main Scholastic with Trey. We were in Educationals, mm-hmm. which was a different building. And thinking back, I didn't feel as weird because, you know, I went Queens. Queens is the most diverse borough.
Exactly.
And, you know, you went to school with everybody. So, right. you know, I'm like, cool, Asians, this is great.
Right.
And got along with everybody. But, yeah, I can only imagine being in a wholly white environment. Like, if I didn't have Julie Chen and, you know, like Jennifer Lowe and, like, Sandra Gonzalez, I'd be like, oh, this is really awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, something that I always dealt with from my a kid is when people see me, I don't outright look Latina. I mean, some people can get it. Some people see it and they're like, oh, she's Colombian or she's Colombian American. But some people will look at me like, where are you from? So I was never cool enough to hang out with the white kids, but I was never Latina enough to hang out with the Latino kids.
Interesting.
It was a very interesting experience. So I always felt left out. I mean, does that happen when you start your career? I don't know. I think more so than anything, I was aware that I was the only, or like one of the only minorities in the group per se.
Mm-hmm.
But I just you're just floating, like you don't know where to go or what to do.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a foreign experience. I had gone through that quite a few times.
Yeah.
So you just kind of like, I literally remember being like, whatever.
Just
move forward, work hard, do your thing, show them up. You know.
Yeah.
And I did. I remember that our last project. I worked really hard to be. I keep coming back to the word obnoxious, but I mean it in a positive way.
Assertive,
loud. I feel like all these negative words are coming to mind. I was going to say aggressive or...
I think they also have negative connotations when you apply them to people of color and to women specifically. Because, like, you know, I was telling you, I remember I was called abrasive. And I was looking at the person who told it to me. And that person slams phones, like throws doors open, has cursed at people. And I just have a tone where it's just kind of like, I'm not taking your shit. Right
yeah.
Now. But I'm not saying I'm not taking your shit.
Right.
I just have the tone of,
right.
I'm not taking your crap.
Right.
And that was called abrasive. And I thought, you know, for someone who actually I hear like slamming phones down and cursing at and people calling people boneheads. I think it's very hypocritical
Absolutely.
To tell me I'm being abrasive
Absolutely.
When... But maybe it's not bad to be abrasive.
That's
but
the thing.
I feel like there's a level. There's a level with obnoxiousness. You know, it's not being obnoxious. It's just saying, I deserve this, so you should give it to me. And I'm not saying because of privilege. I'm
right.
saying because I worked for it.
You know, I think that's... You hit the nail on the head with it. Like a word like obnoxious, I don't see it as a negative. I'm like, yes, I'm... And it's... Maybe it is a word that I'm looked at, the people use when they look at me because I am so, they take it to a negative place. But I see it more like, that's right, I'm ambitious, I'm going to fight for what I want, you will remember me.
Yeah.
But still, even I, like I'm thinking about this now, I introduced this negative term to tell my story about, you know, being a minority in this world, and you know, you too can make it. It really is. It's like a struggle.
It's
you
catch know? 22 in
yeah.
a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Well, I like that you're saying be assertive, XYZ. Because I remember when I first asked for a raise, I made a list. I pretty almost made a PowerPoint presentation if necessary,
That's
saying
awesome.
I deserve a raise because of X, Y, and Z. And they said, oh, that's great, and we think you do great work, and X, Y, and Z, But yeah, and it was a money thing. It wasn't really, I mean, I don't know if it went deeper than that, but I know my boss at the time was very concerned about dollars and cents.
Right.
So, and then someone actually ended up quitting, and then I was like, well, I got another job, so I'm quitting. And then,
of course,
I got, because there were going to be two people down, and she didn't want to deal with that.
Right.
And then I remember the president at the time of the company had said, oh, yeah, we should give Jennifer a raise, because I see her, she's here late all the time. And he didn't even know what I was doing there. I could have just, like, at the time, Netflix didn't exist. But imagine if it was, I could have been Netflixing it up, you know? But, I mean, I was working. Sure. But it was, it's, like, I needed all this stuff to happen.
Yeah.
Like a sheet of dominoes. I needed all that to happen right. to get represent. Even when I said, I deserve, because, and then it makes you shrink away and be like, well, maybe I shouldn't have been as quote-unquote aggressive.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't have been quote-unquote obnoxious.
Right.
And it's not being obnoxious. It's right. being assertive.
Yeah.
And the numbers come out consistently, especially for writing. Who submits more? White men. Who's, you know, more obnoxious, quote-unquote, white men? They continue to submit. They submit, they submit, right. they submit. And they get published because they do not take no for an answer.
Right.
I won't even get into the whole thing that happened with the Best American Poetry and the guy, you know, taking on the Chinese name and Sherman Alexis. That was a huge thing.
And wow.
I'll save that for another episode.
Okay. Wow.
But, you know, a white man basically put his, put a Chinese name on the work because he was not getting it published elsewhere. And so he decided to do it there, and admittedly the editor Sherman Alexie said, yes, I did notice it a little bit more because it was diverse.
Wow.
You know, it was by a diverse person, it was by someone who's Chinese, but I liked the poetry. And then he's keeping it in the, so, you know, anyone who's been following it on Twitter and online, you know, but that aggressive, you know, that kind of like, well, I'm not getting this, so I'm just going to do this, you know, that kind of entitlement. People of color, specifically people of color, I think people in the LGBTQ community and right. possibly even the disabled community, I don't want to like speak for all minority communities, but I know for a fact in the POC community that we feel as though we shouldn't be made to we shouldn't fight,
we should be complacent.
Yeah, we should be complacent and we grateful. Should be polite consistently. We need to constantly be polite.
Right.
Can I please, maybe will you consider that I've done a really good job
yes.
and that maybe you
yes.
might give me a raise in the next, but if you don't want to do that right now, that's cool, that's
yes.
cool, I'll just wait here and be nice and quiet
until it's
and,
right.
yeah and
know,
that might not happen.
That's there are plenty of people in my family
mm-hmm.
that are exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I was working a side job in high school, and I quit it
mm-hmm.
to go to college and get an even better job in the
mm-hmm.
city. And my mother was like, don't do that, like, you don't know what
mm-hmm.
you're giving up on, like
mm-hmm.
you should really stay in a job. And she has been in her job over 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
There was no leaving, there was no movement.
Oh, yeah.
There was
oh, yeah.
you know, please, no, okay, we'll talk
mm-hmm.
about this another
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I really didn't put it together that it's a cultural thing.
Oh, yeah. My mom, too, at the time. And you should see. Well, she's retired now, so we can talk about it. How she would talk about the bosses after they left, you know? And
yeah.
be like, can't stand his ass.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, in front, it's like, yeah, sure, whatever you need, da-da-da-da,
yeah.
And she's surprised when I say, yeah, I'm not doing that. That's not my job.
Right.
And I have a right to say that's not my... I don't have a right to say you should pay me for not doing my job.
Right.
I have a right to say, well, now you want me to get your coffee? No.
Right.
I am an editor. I am not a coffee person.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, definitely.
You know, like,
I think, you know, that's funny. I think my approach to speaking to my higher-ups, if you
mm-hmm.
will, when it comes to raises, there is this desire not to give up. I won't give up, even
mm-hmm.
if inside I'm like dying because
mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm sweating and it's so obvious, or like my hands are shaking, you
oh,
know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't give up. And I think honestly I fight harder because I'm Latina, because I'm a woman.
Mm-hmm. And who's gonna fight for you if,
right.
you, if not you?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's kind of fun to see them squirm, you know, because they don't know what to do. They're like, wait, You're coming at me with facts. You're coming at me with truth. You're not, you know, complacent and being grateful that I threw you something. No, bitch, I earned that. Excuse my language. I was like, I worked for that. And, you know, that's something I'm so proud of. And that is part of my culture, too, being that strong-willed, independent woman that's going to go for what I want. And no matter how many times you fall, just not quitting. And I think that's something that I wish more minorities could embrace. Like, don't give up. Sure, you're going to be knocked down a lot because of your culture. You're going to be told no because simply because of the color of your skin. Yes, that's a reality, even to this day. But don't give up.
Yeah.
You know, people will listen eventually.
Yeah.
And I've seen it. I've seen it happen time and time again in my life, in my friends' lives. Like, it just...
Yeah.
I feel like there could be a time in publishing where I could look around the floor and it's just... colorful, you know,
that'd
and
be nice.
that to me is something I would love to see before I retire or win the lotto, whichever one's first.
Well, we're doing this interview on the anniversary of the day that those four girls got killed in the church bombing. I saw Ava DuVernay had been tweeting about that earlier today, and I think of it as, you know. And maybe it's, you know, very lofty to do compare, but I think it's so important is if people who were offended and astonished and hurt by that event, which was a catastrophic event,
right,
of these children being murdered, essentially,
right,
fought for them. They fought after that. They marched. They took beatings. They took, they kept getting beat. They got jailed. You know, people died.
Right.
And it's for us to continue to be persistent and to fight for those same rights, even if it's in your office, if it's getting in a lit magazine, if it's, you know, fight, you know, people who are doing for Black Lives Matter. I mean, so many people are fighting, and we're all fighting our own internal battles, too, at the same time we're fighting. And it can be so exhausting and tiring. I know at Decatur Book Fest last week, the week before last, there was a diversity panel with Daniel and Roxane Gay and so many amazing people, Saeed Jones and Angela Flournoy, and they said it's exhausting being a person of color sometimes because you're always having to be nice.
Yeah.
And you always have to explain and educate, but you constantly have to fight. And Roxane Gay's written a lot about this too. It's like, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted by the fighting. I'm exhausted about writing constantly about the need for diversity. I'm exhausted about talking about diversity, but I'm going to keep talking about diversity, and I'm going to hope people listen.
Right.
So hopefully, like, what you're saying and what I'm saying is, essentially, people just keep going.
Keep going.
Because it's going to be tiring. It's going to suck. Like, those rejections are going to suck.
Right.
Those quiet moments where you don't hear anything for a resume or a residency application or a submission are going to suck.
Yes. And if they're going to tear down at you or at your confidence, you're going to second guess everything you've ever thought about what you wanted. And, you know, exhaustion, that word is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect word to use when you are fighting for what you want and what's right. You know, during that exhaustion period, you are building up again. You're building up for the next fight.
You know.
And as cliche as this sounds, dust yourself off and keep going. And I visually see myself dusting off.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I'm on the floor in my apartment, like sobbing, like I can't do this anymore, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm doing this alone or whatever. Whatever the thoughts that you have. When you're having a really bad day, you let it out. You go for a run.
Yeah.
Have some ice cream. And dust it off. Get up and go and keep fighting. Just keep fighting.
It's super important to just keep going, guys. So, last question, because we kind of, this was awesome. I love how the conversation went.
Yeah.
So, in your work, have you ever felt like you were mentoring someone else exploring the publishing world? Or if you felt like there were programs where mentorship was possible for those of us in the non-majority, would this change how you thought about publishing as a job option, or at least how you would recommend publishing to someone? Is at least if there was, like, you had the diversity in publishing event, but what if there was core like with this podcast, what if, like, say all those people I've interviewed were in a place and said, we will be your mentors. You know, you have the VP of this, you as design director, and then marketing person.
Right. I'm a huge advocate of mentoring. Mm-hmm. I've had the privilege of having my own interns, mm-hmm. and I make it a point to at least a couple times sit with them and explain the whole business.
Yeah.
Like, humbly. Like, the structure of mm-hmm. how a book is made.
Yeah.
And I also encourage them, network. You want to meet mm-hmm. with an editor? Mm-hmm. Send them an email. Mm-hmm. You know, I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. I'm not the kind of manager that's going to be like, well, who are you talking to? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. No. I think that mentoring is something I thrive in. Like, I remember, mm-hmm. I look at these faces and I remember what it was like to mm-hmm. be that young and hopeful and scared, mm-hmm. right? Because you have to decide your entire life at 22 or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I think being able to talk to interns or entry levels or college kids and just, you know, show them really this is what it's about. I would have loved there to have been a mentorship program mm-hmm. when I was in school. I think there aren't enough of those.
Yeah.
And I think even with internships, like I've heard internships where you are getting coffee or you are making copies or filing or, mm-hmm. you know.
Getting permissions, which is horrible.
Yeah, like it's horrible. The work that nobody wants to do. And, yeah. you know, I get it. Like that's sort of what we all have to do at some point in our mm-hmm. career. But I think it's also important to balance that out. Like, mm-hmm. all right, this is how, you know, you as an editor or as a publicist mm-hmm. or, you know, I think that there's so much value in that. And. Mm-hmm. The best feeling, the best part of my job, hands down, is when my interns or my team come to me and tell me how grateful they are and how yeah. that they've decided on certain things mm-hmm. because of mm-hmm. the relationships mm-hmm. I've had with them. One example I think of is I had a team member who came on board. She was great. She was a very talented artist. But I knew she wanted to go into children's design. Mm-hmm. And I always had that in the back of my head. And I sort of always had my eye open mm-hmm. for those kinds of positions. And one came up, and I remember pulling her into a conference room and saying, look, I don't want you to leave. You're fantastic. Mm-hmm. You're great. Like, I think I might lose it if you leave because mm-hmm. you're such an integral part of my team. But it's... you have to apply for this. Like, mm-hmm. you need to go and fly and
yeah.
discover. Mm-hmm. I'm not being a good manager if I don't encourage you to mm-hmm. do that. Mm-hmm. And I think she did. She got the job and she went. And
oh, yay.
Yeah, and she's doing amazingly now. And I would rather have that. Like, you need to grow.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I had a mentor in college, I think that's something I could have picked up on early. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, like... that kind of relationship where you have that confidence and truth mm-hmm. and no one's trying to sell you this idea and you get true exposure of what the industry is like.
Yeah.
So as long as I can in my role and the company I work for, they're wonderful about that. Mm-hmm. As long as I can in my role, I would mentor anybody and everybody that really wants to see what it's like to work in design and, mm-hmm. and publishing in general.
Yeah. So remember that, people.
Uh-oh.
We have the inbox. So, okay, I lied. Last question. Now, this is the last question.
Sure.
So, we spoke about the difference between, in your company, design with covers and the interior. So, you do work with the art department on occasion, maybe not as closely as some other company. I've worked very closely with the creative director at my company, so we're always in cahoots with the cover and whatnot. So have there been instances when you have been able to work with the art or get hear about the art, the cover at the, I guess, pre-prep stage, because it's the composition stage before it becomes final, where there's been some good elements or bad elements of diversity that you kind of said, hey, I don't think we should do that because that's stereotypical. And I think I've mentioned in our previous episodes, I definitely know that there was this really cool link going around where they said, look at how all these covers by Asian artists look the same. You know, like they always had tigers, or they were always red. Like if they were Chinese American, it was always red.
Right.
I don't know, you know, I guess for the Chinese flag, and it's a very striking cover. Or
right.
Like animals, you know. For India, again, animals, but then kind of like floral, or like, there's like this consistently kind of stereotypical imagery.
Right.
Just because the person has an ethnic name.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, I don't think I've ever seen that. I think one of the truths about the division I work for is the actual work we put out is incredibly diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a level of respect for the cultures.
Oh, that's fabulous to hear.
It is wonderful. I mean, the books, our books are incredible writers. And the jacket designers and the cover designers are so talented. And some of them well-known.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to converse with them on certain projects. And they're humble and wonderful, and you know they're respectful of the interior.
Mm-hmm.
There's a conversation that can be had without there being any kind of ego or anything.
Yeah.
And there is a respect for the author. Mm-hmm. I think the cover designers, the jacket designers, our interior designers, really everybody in my division have the author in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do we please the author? How can we mm-hmm. put his or her message out there
mm-hmm.
the best way?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no greater feeling than getting an email from an author and saying, you've made my dream come true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
a lot don't notice, I feel like. At least if I, you know, they're like, yeah, this is what's wrong. Yeah,
right.
Like, not like with the design, but just like textually, you know, the typos and whatnot.
Sure.
But it is nice to hear someone say, we're so happy with the interior.
Right. And our list is very, very diverse. And I think that the art that we put out there in terms of the cover or the work itself is so, is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very proud of that, of the work we do. And, you know, I think it points out two different parts of diversity in publishing, working in it and producing, like what you're creating.
Good point.
And certainly my division is way ahead of that. Like, they are producing some really amazing
mm-hmm.
diverse literature.
Mm-hmm.
And
you
know,
just need to hire the diverse
yeah,
people to help produce it.
But I'm so hopeful of that because
yeah.
of the work we do. Mm-hmm. And because there is that level of respect when it comes to art
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've had all good experiences when it comes to that. When it comes to, you know, the covers and
authors.
Fantastic. Yeah, I have to say that.
Great. I wasn't trying to stir stuff up.
But No.
I like to end this on a happy note where
yeah.
it's like, I've never had that problem. It's like, yeah.
No, it's a great question to ask. And it just reminds me of how respectful we are of our authors.
Awesome.
And the literature itself.
Yeah.
So I'm that was a great question. Thank you
oh,
for asking.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Claudia, thank you so, so much
yeah,
for this.
You.
This is a fabulous discussion. I love where it went. So
that's great.
And I hope it gave a lot of inspiration and integrity, because I know people were saying with Tanana Reeves episode, they're like, I'm inspired. And at least one listener can say, I'm going to do a job, apply for 10 jobs now. And
yes.
Yes,
yes, do it.
Yes.
Don't give up.
So are you on social media, and how may people find you on social media? And
yes.
With you?
So I'm on Twitter. You can find me at just Claudia NYC. And I do have a blog, believe it or not. It's stepawayfromthecheesefries.blogspot.com. Cheese fries is, you know, the end of me, but also the beginning of me. So, yeah.
Nathan has good cheese fries, and you're a native New Yorker,
oh
so
my
it
goodness.
Makes sense.
There's some incredible... I can go on and on. The blog isn't about cheese fries specifically, but it just talks about, you know... You'll see. But yes, feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to answer questions. Any questions that you guys have, I think I'd be happy to. I'd be honored, in fact, if anybody did reach out to me. So thank you, Jen. This was wonderful. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. I love all my guests. You know, I think the podcast is what it is because of the guests and the knowledge and just the information and just kind of like, I just want people to feel uplifted, but also feel like they're getting something out of every episode. So I really appreciate you coming here and talking to us about being the hiring manager and being
yeah.
obnoxious. So, quote unquote.
That's so. The word.
God, she was so obnoxious that time.
Like, thank you.
So. So next episode, we're going to have Carrie Higgins, who is a phenomenal nonfiction writer. And we're going to talk about disability representation. And she's been very vocal about AWP and other things. And I am enthusiastic about this conversation and happy to veer into the disability realm because it's so underrepresented in the realm of diversity, I feel like. So that's going to be next episode. And again, if you do follow the podcast, if you don't, and this is your first time listening, I hope you enjoyed it. And again, at minoritiesinpublishing.tumblr.com or on Twitter at minoritiesinpub. And thanks so much, and talk to you next time.